search has to be here. And you know, the program says that we are doing a series called Good Foundation, and today's topic is Gift of Grace for You. Now, when Mary sent in the spring or summertime program, I think it was like end of February or something, I just looked at, you know, am I on? Am I going to be worship? Am I going to be speaking? Oh, Susan's speaking. Oh, let's see the topic. Grace, a gift for you. Yes! I just hit the jackpot. I was so happy. I literally just like shouted. Like, I was like, on the sofa, like, yes! Yeah, that literally happened. So, coincidentally, grace and who we are in Christ and how to receive grace, how to live in grace, how to walk in grace every day has been something that God has been working in my life for the last few months. So that, maybe that's why I felt like, yay, this is like the best topic ever. Then I started preparing. And very soon I got very overwhelmed. I was like, oh my word, this is too big. I'm not entirely sure if I can convey everything into like a speech. What I did is I went through the Bible, like especially the New Testament, and I highlighted in my new version because I didn't ruin my Bible. I highlighted every or almost every verse that's got something to do with grace, and I put them all together. And I just kept reading through those verses over and over and over again. And again, I got so overwhelmed. I was like, this is huge. This is huge. What can I say to these people that you haven't told them already, Lord? A quick recap about what we've been through so far. Ephesians is amazing, a banger of a letter. It's one of my favorites ever. It's solid. It's rock hard. It's like so meaty, and there's so much that we can take away from it. Like we could spend a speech on each verse of each chapter, and we would be here till the Lord comes back, and even then we wouldn't finish. So the letter of Ephesians lays down the foundation of who we are. It helps us to grow in our identity. And I think that is something very key. If we want to live a Christian life, we need to know who we are. We need to know that we've been blessed with every spiritual blessing. We need to know that we are chosen, we are redeemed, we are adopted, we have been saved by grace. And this is our identity. This is who we are in Christ. And you know what? Satan knows really well that if we know who we are, then he's got something to be afraid of. So he will try every single trick to try to distort this identity. Are these thoughts familiar to you? I'm just not worthy enough. I feel like nobody really loves me, they just pretend they do. Oh, I messed up again. Oh, I can't do good. I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. I have surely been struggling with these thoughts in the past. Slash version, whatever. Because Satan constantly tries to bombard you with these thoughts. I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. Da 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 da. But you know what? That's where it's wrong. Because it's not about me being good enough. It's not about me being worthy enough. It's not about me never messing things up. It's not about me being lovely to people. It's not about me. It's all about him. God had planned since the creation of the earth that I'll be his adopted daughter. You will be his adopted son. His adopted daughter. By his grace. Honestly, 2 weeks ago, three weeks ago, when Pete gave his speech, that was like one of the best pictures I ever heard, or illustrations I've ever heard, about what it means to be chosen of Christ. He brought up the example of how when he met Mandy, he knew after, what, 3 months or something, that she is going to be my wife. I have chosen her. It has taken Mandy a bit longer to realize, to respond to the calling, and to step into it. And now they are married, and it's awesome. And you are an awesome couple. But it just says so much about how God has chosen us since the creation of the world. We didn't even know about it, you know? But we got time. We responded to His call. And the moment we respond to His call, we get into His family. We get adopted in Him. And you know, that is amazing and it's unchangeable because, would you ever disown your child if they mess up? I hope not. I know my parents wouldn't do that. Even if I went home with a tattoo or something. You know, that status, that never changes. I am wearing my status t-shirt. That is the one that we've got in Moldova last year on the YWAM mission. I was really hoping that at least one or two people would be here today who went to Moldova, but no such luck. I was wondering if they remember what status meant. Basically, our position in God's family. That we are adopted, we are heirs. And you know, as heir, we have a rich inheritance. In fact, so rich, like, it's so much, it's so rich that it is so great that we need to pray for a spirit of wisdom and revelation and knowledge of God just to understand what we've got and what we've been called to. So if you, like I'm going to touch on this a little bit later as well, the identity system, just recap. So if you feel like sometimes you're struggling with who you are, I help you. Just, like, you can write it down, or you can just say in your head, I am, dot, dot, dot. I am blessed. I am chosen. I am adopted. I am loved. I am redeemed. I am forgiven. I am in Christ. And we've got power. We've got the very same power in us, that extracted Jesus out of the tomb. I mean, there must have been something. I mean, there was an earthquake and everything going on, and he kind of just exploded out of the tomb. I'm going to start this. I really hope that everybody can see what I'm going to do. Quite exciting, to be fair. So, in verses 19-22, we read that the power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at his high hand in the heavenly realms, for above, far above all rule and authority, power and dominion, and every name that is invoked, not only in the present age, but also in the one to come. And God placed all things under his feet and appointed him to be head over everything for the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills everything in every way. So basically, my drawing is going to be bad because I'm not an artist. So imagine that, oh no. This is a very symmetric from Earth. That should work better than I normally do. There you go. Recognize it? And in the heavenly realms, there's some. So like really, all the authorities and the prince of the air, I'm not sure how to do this, so just imagine that this is the enemy. They're kind of like rules over the earth. Well, what happened? When Christ came, this was meant to be read. Never mind, I just forgot to read. And then he read, when God raised him, he basically seated him far above the earth, everything in it, the heaven realms, the princes, the authorities, the powers and rulers, and Christ is seated. This is the throne. And he is ruling. So yeah, let's start with that. Just keep that in mind. So what we've got today, in chapter 2, Ephesians chapter 2, Paul reminds us, we go a little bit back at the beginning, and he reminds us who we were, which is kind of like important to know who we were in order to know who we are now. So the first three verses said, "As for you, you were dead in your transgressions and your sin, in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world and of the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. All of us also lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our flesh and following its desires and thoughts. Like the rest, we were by nature deserving of wrath." That's not really jolly, is it? Let's see how to do this. Here we are. Should I blue or something? Should it? So this is us. So this is us living in slavery, in bondage, because this group, the bad guys, remember, the prince of the air, the rulers of the air, they really dominate the earth and everything in it, which includes us. So you know what? There's so many categories that people kind of like categorize themselves into, like by race, language, geography, demographics, financial status, so many categories. But you know what? So spiritually, there's only two. You are alive, or you're dead. You can't be both. I know that there's this film, Prince of Pride, and Wesley kind of like dies, or almost dies, but he gets back, someone brings him back with Miracle Max skill, and that makes him mostly dead. You know, there's no such thing as spiritual grounds. You are either dead or you are alive, which means you are either in Christ or outside of Christ. No middle ground, really. No gray area here. There's many gray areas in many, many ways, you know, morally and everything, but this is something that is not gray. You are alive or you are dead. You are separated from Christ or you are in Christ. And that is regardless of circumstances and values, regardless of how we've been brought up. You know, you can say that, but I've been brought up as a Christian. I have my moral values. I didn't even have before marriage. But if you are not in Christ, if you haven't responded to his calling, you're still dead. Spiritually, you are. That wasn't always the case, though, because back all the way back to Adam and Eve. Do you remember the story? God told them that tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they can eat from every tree but not that one, because if they do, they die straight away. And then the serpent, the clever one, he asked Eve, did God really say that you're going to die if you eat from this fruit? From all the trees in this garden? Eve was like, no, just this one. If we eat from this one, we're going to die. And the Satan, who is the father of lies, who hasn't got an ounce of truth in it, not a tiny, tiny, tiny spot of truth in it, he says, no, you will surely not die. You're going to be like God. And long story short, they took the fruit and they eaten the fruit. What happened? They toppled over and died? No. They got separated from God straight away. So spiritually, that was the moment of their death. And yeah, later on, they eventually died physically as well. And in that moment, humanity placed themselves under the dominion of the enemy that is ruling. Okay. Now, it is not fun to be slave to sin. It is not fun to be slave to begin with. Being slave is awful. And living in bondage is something that basically rids you from your freedom. And the wages of sin is death. So this is not looking really jolly so far. The devil knew that because his plan was to spend an eternity with him. But God, did you just love? And the Bible verse begins with, love God. But verses 4 to 7. But because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ, even when we were dead in transgression. It is by grace you have been saved. And God raised us up with Christ, and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus, in order that in the coming ages he might show the incomparable riches of his grace, expressed in his kindness to us in Christ Jesus. But God, Jesus broke into this world when he came and died for us. And he saved us. Friday, I went out with a friend of mine who is not Christian. And she asked me, oh, what are you doing over the weekend? I'm going to prepare because I'm preaching on Sunday. What are you preaching on if you don't mind me asking? Sure, I'm preaching on grace. And she asked, grace? Huh. Yeah, what's grace? And I was like, Jesse, you asking some really, really good questions. And I tried to help her understand with a little example, a little illustration that I will show. If Pete used Downton Abbey, I'm going to use one of my favorites. Not Doctor Who. I think I will need to kind of close the curtains and kind of turn the lights off because the video, unfortunately, is really, really dark. And it is a little clip from a very famous musical called Famous Les Miserables. I'm going to encourage you to pronounce it properly.
Come and serve me, you are weary. The night is cold out here. Though our lives are very humble, what we have to share. There is wine here to revive you. There is bread to make you strong. There's a bed to rest from mourning, rest from pain, and rest from wrong. Bless the food we eat today. Bless our dear sister and our honored guest.
Not like he one day will see us with Christ when he comes back? No. We are ruling with Christ now. What does that mean? It means, it is my doing, it is. It means that we can have a victorious life. We rule with Jesus now. So, what happens when we actually take our rightful place as sons and daughters on the throne? Woohoo! That's with Jesus. We are ruling with him. What happens? What happens when we are in that place of relationship here? It means that Christian life, all of a sudden, is not a strife. It's not push, 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 be good, do this, do that. No. It means that we gain victory, that we enjoy a sweet relationship with Jesus that makes us happy, that makes us joyful in spite of everything that's attacking us. Because, you know, the sad thing is that here we are getting attacked by the world, by the rulers, like the enemy, and by ourselves, the desires of the flesh. It's pretty bad. I mean, no wonder Paul said in Romans, what a wretched man I am. Who can redeem me from this flesh that I am almost like imprisoned in? But praise be to God, because he has saved us and seated us with him on the throne. So we have freedom from bondage. In this realm is when the fruit of the Spirit grows into your life. In this realm is when gifts of the Spirit start working in your life. In this realm is when you talk to people, you are radiant, you become radiant because you're reflecting the glory of the Lord. But, you know, in order to stay here, what we need to do is keep that relationship with God alive. And how do we do that? I can't remember the name of the church as we go from Bristol towards Bridlington, and they always have that funny billboard. I'm not entirely sure what the name is, but last week they had a really cool little slogan or something that said, 7 days without prayer makes 1 week. But not like W-E-E-K, but W-E-A-K. Isn't that true though? The thing is that sometimes we fail or we cease to wait on God. We are not like kind of like rushing out from his presence. And it takes more than just reading your quick devotional in the morning to keep that relationship burning and alive. And I'm the one who's like, unfortunately, so many times I literally just read my devotional, oh wow, this was really good, and then go. No. Strength your rights as you wait upon the Lord. And we wait. And God shows up. He's better than an NHS doctor. Because if you go to the NHS and you sit down, sometimes you have to wait 40, 45 minutes. But God shows up. Sometimes you don't need to pray. You just wait. And when you spend time with him, waiting on him, and then communicating with him, you get transformed by the renewal of your mind. It all happens there. But what happens if we don't do that every day? We don't do it for a week. We don't do it for 2 weeks. It's kind of like we start slipping back into the old mindset. Oh, this Christian life is hard. Oh, I haven't read my Bible. Oh, I'm so bad. I'm a bad Christian. No, guys. Strength will rise waiting for you, Lord. And you know what? The crescendo of this chapter is verses 8 and 9. Oh my God, I love these verses so much. For it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And it is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God. Not by works, so no one can boast. I mean, Paul literally just covered the whole, you have been saved by grace, right? Why does he go back to being saved by grace again? I think the point is that even when you mess up, you don't fall out of grace. You don't need to strive. You know, Christian life doesn't need to be hard. It doesn't need to be like, oh, work, push. No, that's not Christian life. That's not what we've been called to do. We've been called to rule. And by His grace, we can forget our works. Because as soon as we are able, we would be able to do something, anything, to be a better Christian, the whole meaning of grace, like, would lose the point, like, it would not be grace. And we would have read the verse, like, ha, I prayed every day for a whole week, and I waited for God, check this out, I'm a better Christian now. That's not really how it works, does it? No. When you are with Him, He transforms your mind. Ooh. And I quickly touch on the last verse, which is again, oh my word, it's like a whole teaching in it. Verse 10 says, for we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. I mean, He literally just said that we didn't need to do works. And now He says, He prepared good works for us. Isn't it a little bit confusing? Now, let's go back again to the beginning, to Genesis. We have been created. We are in God's mind, in God's heart. And what two things did God tell Adam to do? He said, I'm giving you the earth, so you rule over it, and you also work, like, by your handiwork, you're going to see your food, da 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 da, right? So, rule and work. Now, we've been created to be in relationship with God, and as interesting as it sounds, God needs that relationship too. I mean, He created us on His image, so it means that He put His desires in us. So if we desire to be with Him, because He desires to be with us, which is amazing. And then we fall, when we accept who we are in Christ and we are with Him, He reveals Himself to us. So we get to know Him more. And He does more. He reveals the enemy. So we don't have misconception of what God does and what the enemy does. The other day, my sister said that one of her friends went up to her saying, I just don't get why God took away my husband from me at 39. And my sister said, no, that was not God. Because in John 10:10 it says, the thief only comes to destroy and steal. But God came to give us life and to live life to the full. So He revealed Himself, who the enemy is and what His works are, and He reveals yourself to you. So this means that you can really get to know yourself. Again, going back to identity, you are in Christ. You're not a sinner. You are a saint. And too many Christian people live and walk around with the identity, oh, I'm a sinner. You are holy, set apart. You are salt and light. You are blameless. You are a prince and a princess. So it's time to embrace that. And you know, when you do that, and you got that part down, and you start living in this realm, that's when God can reveal your calling to us. Now, when He says, and He prepared good works in advance for us to walk in them. It didn't just mean having the old lady across the street, which is really nice, by the way, keep doing that, or giving the homeless a cup of tea. please, keep going, keep doing that. No, it's a bit deeper. It's about who, what you were meant to do, about what your purpose in life is. Because that's the only way when we find true fulfillment and true happiness, when we know where our place in this world is, when we are walking in our ministry. And it's really, it can be really tricky to figure it out. And I didn't say that there are not, like, there isn't something super easy that should come just like that. No, it comes by spending loads of time with God. And trust me, I know when He wants you somewhere, He doesn't just hint it. He's gonna let the flipping runway. Like, this is the way. Go. This is what you've been called to do. And if you're struggling to find out what your calling is, maybe just take a long, deep look into your heart, into your passion. One of my big revelations this year was that God works with you and with your passion. I know that a few of you might know that soon I will be moving on to work with women who have been trafficked. And this is something that's been slowly becoming like more and more ripe, you know, over the years. And in February, I remember I was on a train, I was listening to worship, and as I wait, I rise up like an eagle, and I realized I'm waiting for the Lord, but I'm not rising up like the eagle, I'm like the flappy bird. Like, years ago, that was a big thing, you know, the flappy bird that just like fell down every single time. I'm like a flappy bird. I don't know how to wait on the Lord and rise up and be strong. No, Lord, I don't know what to do. Please show me what you want me to do. I want to do what you want me to do. And then all of a sudden, I hear His voice in my heart. I mean, I'm sure that was Him. He was like, what do you want? Oh Lord, I just want to do what you want me to do. No. What do you want to do? And I loved it. I mean, I didn't know how to hide my face from everybody because I was crying. I was like, how can I care for me so much? How can like, this is just unimaginable. Like, what I really want to do is something impossible. Like, there's no way I can go to America in September. But that moment hit it home. God is gracious and merciful, and He loves you and cares for you enough to put passions in your heart that you are actually passionate about. So yeah, if you feel like you're kind of like struggling with knowing who you are, because too many you're not worthy thoughts are going on around in your head. If you feel like you are not entirely sure how to go from here up to there, if you're not entirely sure how to walk in those good works in your calling that God put in your Christ DNA in you, how to walk in your ministry, in your calling. You come to the right place. Just spend time with Him. And maybe just read through these verses over and over again. And trust me, He will reveal yourself to you. He will reveal who you are to you. He will reveal your calling to you. And I will just finish with another video that actually means so much to me. And then Jordan can come up afterwards.
Grace is God's unmerited favor for us, His crazy love. And the truth is, many times we struggle understanding it. If you find yourself struggling to understand God's grace, don't beat yourself up. Even the disciples struggle with understanding grace.
Jesus said, you're alive, I can't believe you're alive. Okay, I was at the mall, and I wasn't catching any fish, okay? But I heard this voice, and the voice said, cast your nets on the other side. And so I'm thinking, I'm a fish of my own, I'm doing about not catching any fish, you know. And so I throw that net over there, and then a gaggle of fish pop into that net, and I'm going, this is a total miracle. Who could have done that? I need to know who told me to throw the net to the other side. And boom, I look up, and I mean, there's you. You're looking at me on the seashore, going, it is I, the Lord, it's your lamb, I can't believe your eyes. This is awesome. Andrew, get out of the boat. Come on,
Peter.
Yeah. You love me. Yes, I love you. I love you. You're alive. This is so great.
You gotta feed my sheep.
Andrew, get out of the boat. Come on, man. It's him.
Peter.
Yeah.
Do you love me?
I love you. Yes. And I'm so sorry about that rooster clucking. I have no idea what that meant, but I do know.
That horror.
Okay.
Then feed my sheep.
Andrew, I'm smiling, but I'm serious. Come on, get out of the boat. It's him.
Peter.
Yeah.
Do you love me?
Jesus. Mere words cannot describe the passion that I have for you. I love you. You know everything. I love you.
Good. Good. Then feed my sheep.
I didn't even know your livestock. That is so like you, though. There's something new about you all the time. That's what I love about you.
Peter.
Yeah.
Do you remember the morning the lady went to the tomb?
Yeah. We're all in the upper room trying to figure out what to do next, you know, because we thought you were dead. You know, you were dead, you know. We're trying to figure all that out, you know. And Mary comes running up, and Mary's like saying, beehive, beehive, beehive. And I'm thinking, I'm allergic to bees, like keep them out, you know what I'm saying? But as she kept getting closer, I heard her correctly, she was saying, he's alive, he's alive, he's alive. Who's alive? And she said, she was at the tomb, and the tomb was empty, and she said that there was an angel there, and the angel said, go tell the disciples of Peter that everything is okay, he's risen. And so, me and John, we hightailed it down there, and if John says he beat me, he's totally lying, alright? I beat him, FYI, alright, you know? And we get down there, and I'm holding that tomb, and there it is, it is empty, there's nothing in there, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, what does this mean? What does this mean? And John is right there. John is so good at words. He should write a book. He is so good at words. And John says, don't you get it, Peter? This is everything Jesus said he was going to do. And you did it. It's done. Let's go. This is so great.
Wait. The angel said what?
Go tell the disciples and Peter that everything is okay. He is risen. You've risen. Let's go.
He said what?
Go tell the disciples and Peter. You said my name. Why did you say my name?
Peter, that's grace.
No, I don't deserve that, because that night people kept coming up to me asking me if I belonged to you, if I was with you, and I kept denying you left and right, all right? No, it'll take me my whole life to make up for what I did. It was unforgivable for
no,
what I did.
No. What I did on the cross was meant to take what is unforgivable and make it forgivable. That's my grace. It's not about you. It's always about me. That's grace, Peter.
Mm-hmm.